Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Trupanion, medical insurance for the life of your pet, is a proud sponsor of Pure Dog Talk. Trupanion invites you to sign up for their breeder support program by clicking the link on our partner page at puredogtalk.com. Here, breeders can access immediate transitional insurance coverage for new litters going home, puppy kits, one-on-one support, and a whole lot more, all at no cost to you. Sign up on our partner page today and mention Pure Dog Talk sent you. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are live in New York City at the Big Apple at Westminster Kennel Club Week, and I have a very special guest today. Pam Bruce is joining us from Canada.
Yes, thank you.
Excellent. And Pam, I'm so excited to get to finally visit with you. I've shown you dogs. I've watched you judge dogs. And I think that people need to know a little bit more about your history. So
okay.
I'm glad you've joined us. Give us the 411.
Okay. So growing up, my parents actually owned their first Maltese in the early 60s and went from there. We had a few Maltese leading into my very first dog that I ever showed. Believe it or not, was 4 years old. I finished her on my own under my grandmother's in Canada.
Oh my gosh. A Maltese. Awesome.
And Tom Bradley always calls BS on it, but we laugh because Billy Milne actually did her top knot for me. I helped with the part with the knitting needle. Right. I wasn't a allowed to leave the grooming table till it was perfect. I would stack her on top of the coffee table and teach her to stand for little cookies. I was tall for four because I'm tall now. So when I walked in the ring, they literally set the panel up. It was all my grandmother's. And she was of a quality Maltese, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But I thought, oh, I can do this.
I'm cool.
Right. And then growing up as well, Luke, Eric, and I competed in junior handling continually.
Okay.
So it became a running joke because my parents actually ended up breeding very successfully Lhasa Apso's.
Okay.
So we went from there, mostly starting late 60s, early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a running joke. Luke literally and I had pajama parties together at my parents' house.
Love that.
And he would hold up the rings in junior handling for his Lhasa being shown. Well, my mom was in on the Lhasa. So it was always a huge bone of contention with me when he would fly in at the last minute. Hopefully not to beat me. But we had a great time with that. So my parents were really successful with that. So the only dog I ever really wanted growing up was an Afghan. Let me correct that. It was an Airedale or an Afghan. My parents would never let me have an Airedale. And believe it or not, why I loved the Airedales so much was in Canada, Lhasas were actually in the terrier group.
Really?
So because it was a Lhasa Apso Terrier and they clearly didn't fit. But they weren't in the non-sporting group. So I would always get to take in the famous Airedale men, one of their dogs for best of winners at the end of the line. And it was the only breed except for an Afghan I wanted. And my parents were absolutely forbidding the fact that an Airedale would rip out the Lhasa coat.
Oh, yeah.
Or I would spend all my time pulling hair instead of brushing hair.
Right.
So they allowed me an Afghan. And I finished my first Afghan when I was 13. And that's actually when I met Michael. So from there, I went into the grandeur dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But assisting prior to that, I would do things. My background as far as all breed handling went was Garrett Lambert would let me clean his X-Pens. And he's the one that actually taught me about Afghans. He said, you have to take it responsibly if you're going to have one. He explained about their personalities. He allowed me to walk the dogs so that I learned how sighthounds were very different. Always double leads. Very clever the way he taught me things. Going from that, my other passion as we grew up was standard poodles. And so Garrett allowed me again. And I thought about this later. All these times that he allowed me to do things was so beneficial because I learned so much. but he wasn't paying an assistant. So I would scoop, I would clean cages. I was allowed to brush except for at the start, everything except for their back hair and their top knot.
Right.
So I was allowed, again, in air quotes, to bathe bracelets and puffs and,
sure,
you know, things like that, to finish their ears. And then from there, I actually apprenticed under somebody who I adored, and that was Ed Henderson. So that was really my first trips away from home down into Florida, okay, when the circuit was massive.
Right.
And so I, again, learned very well from Ed and learned lessons extremely well from him and would spend time, and that's how I became friends with Buddy and Joseph in the day and all the poodle guys that I ended up, as I grew up, showing the grandeur dogs, Michael would let me help them as well. So I'd be, was in my heaven, brushing pooties all day long and
not,
further.
You know, I have never understood the whole, I'm in heaven because I brush hair. You see, I don't do hair.
Well, it's funny about doing hair because it's such a mix over my life because I either pull it,
right,
and the calluses on my hands, right,
yeah,
that you can
That's,
see
I
from
pull
the
hair, but brushing.
Right. But I've got a theory with it. If it's such a balance because you're either pulling towards you to pull hair or brushing away to brush. So it,
I like it.
It gives you balance right
there.
Digging to the egg.
I get that
right
now.
So, and then as far as background too with the coated dogs, I worked for a while for Elaine Whitney. Again, poodles, and her husband ended up Bob Whitney with Afghans. So going from there. And then the person that I think I'm most well known for besides Michael, of course,
right,
is Carol Hollins.
Oh,
so Carol was my rock. And that's okay, where I really got to know Dick and John, Dick Mean and John Reeve Newson, obviously, Nigel and Bill, who were my heart and soul. And growing up, helped them so much. We would go there every summer when it was too hot to show the peaks, and we would go to Nigel and Bill's and pick out the dogs for the future, assisting them with even breeding at some point with Carol. Carol had standard poodles as well and showed those. So that's really my connection that allowed me to continue with both, because Carol not only had the poodles, but she had Nigel and Bill's peaks.
Right.
We had Lotus Tuttons, Airedale Bitch, and we had all the hounds through Dick and John,
right,
and Max Magner.
Okay.
So I was like,
you definitely got a varied background.
Yeah. But what was so great was my passion for the terriers, the poodles, and the hounds was so able to continue through Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And Carol was a great warm-up for me from Michael because she was a consummate professional. She was very, if you didn't know her, I often think about this because people tell me I'm so much like my grandmother, who, my family, I'm fourth generation actually of dogs,
wow,
show dogs. So my grandmother actually had and raised collies, but what was interesting was she was, we called her the Iron Maiden. And people say I'm so much like her, but I actually think a lot more of it with the dog shows was first Carol,
right,
and then Michael, because
right,
he's so focused as well. So Carol's the one that taught me every single day, and this is without a word of a lie, every single day, every toy is bathed before the start of the show, and all I would do was bathe them all before the schedule, say the schedule starts at 8, all those toys had to be bathed by 8. And then I dried continually, and they're wrapped up in towels, obviously, so they were fine. And then we went in to the standard poodles and the Afghans, and I would always have one of my parents' lasses with us, or a grandeur dog. And that's how I learned to be meticulous, not only in the caregiving, because two people that would be at the first dog show in the morning were George Ward and Ross,
mm-hmm,
and Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with Michael. Michael is a specialist, but just because he wasn't there at the start of the show,
mm-hmm,
we were working with those dogs continually, like till late at night,
mm-hmm,
and early in the morning. And through Michael, who I spent, I think, the greater part. Michael and I showed dogs together for 40 years.
Wow.
So I, just by way of background for people that don't know me, and I'm not sure if you know this, but once I got my first grandeur dog, I didn't show for anyone else. And that, coincidentally, my first special was the same time I was going into the police service. So it worked extremely well.
Okay.
So what I would do, just for background, is I would get a dog given to me from Michael and Roger. Sometimes my name was on them, but most often not. Roger owned the dogs. And what I would do is get them prepared. So it would be Michael's next special,
right?
Waiting in the Wings. Right. So they called it Grandeur North, and Roger was phenomenal at allowing me and being able to allow me to afford traveling to the dog shows. And this is long before social media, so we did everything by hand. Michael planned his campaigns. Michael, to this day, is my best friend. And I even get emotional talking about it, but it's great because, as you know, and I listened to an interview, Michael being called Kid Vicious. Yes. But it was because of how focused and driven he was and how meticulous he was. And I was always grateful watching that, knowing that I was on that team, because there were formidable Afghan kennels in the day in the East Coast. So Karen Wagner with her beautiful dogs, Jay Hafford with his right. Joy Bear, you would walk into that ring and it was absolutely so difficult to get out of that breed. And so I had great pride being part of that. But I was also fortunate that I was on that team, not away from it. Because the whole team together worked so extremely well. And that is to say, Michael's showmanship, the way he conducts himself, how professional he was, how focused he was with the dogs, and then Roger being able to afford us that right. because of his background in real estate and in New York and that, and him being so passionate about the breed himself, and learning so much from them. And I can honestly say, between those people, the one thing I learned, and I think a lot of people were really surprised about this once they got to know us, I don't ever remember, and I'm being really honest when I say this, I don't ever remember a bad word being spoken about anyone or people's dogs. And I think that's something that's so important today,
yes.
going forward. And it's very similar to, as I progressed with Michael, we would often set up at the side of the greens setup. Mm-hmm. So there again, I was in my element, right back to allowing to brush and dry Airedale furnishings. I wasn't allowed to touch a hair, but just doing things like that that made you learn so much. And Peter was phenomenal, and so was Beth, about saying, like, for example, I had never dried a Kerry Blue before. And we were at Montgomery one weekend and it was pouring rain. And I remember Beth saying to me, and Peter was there as well, and they'd give you just like a 2-minute version of what they needed done and what you were to do. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as that dog was dried, then somebody else, obviously, in the setup would take over.
Right.
And but it was the small things that you learned with those people, whether it was through Buddy and Joseph, whether it was through Carol, Peter and Beth, and especially Michael and Carol, that you really take those lessons going forward, not only in dogs, but in life and in judging. And that is that everybody has a talent, everybody has something to bring to the table, and that you should never, ever speak of anyone poorly. Because together we all make up what is this passion for all of us, which is this sport.
If we can just put a giant bracket around that, and I think part of what I kind of struggle with in today's sport mm-hmm. is that I grew up not clearly as well associated as you did, but with that same kind of very specific way of doing things. And you didn't say bad things about other people's dogs. And I don't understand this mindset, whether it is people are not given the tools to know what they have mm-hmm. and evaluate it against another dog. I don't understand that.
The other thing that I think is really interesting, and I know Michael touched on it, and we talk about it often, is the idea of breeding stock. So, for right. example, I think back then, we had the luxury of big working kennels.
And that is so important. It's so what I wanted Michael to talk about. There was a big piece of what I wanted him to talk about, because we don't have that today, clearly.
But you know what's interesting with that dynamic? So Grandeur ended up being a fairly big working kennel. Mm-hmm. Carol had that phenomenal old kennel with all the Peaks and the Poodles. Mm-hmm. Nigel and Bill had right. their facility. Dick and John had, I mean, people have spoken to me about the article that I did for Dick, mm-hmm. Dick's memory, in regards to that kennel. But yes, they had numbers, but it also afforded us to learn the quality, right?
Right. And the thing about today's world, we don't have the facility. Any of us don't have those kind of facilities. Legislatively,
right.
you know, whatever, we just don't have them. And the only way I think that you get that kind of quality is when you're able to look at the long picture.
Right.
Right. So I can grow this dog up. I can breed this bitch 3 times to 4, to, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I can look and I can evaluate. And when you can't keep the numbers, You know, that one that if I had grown it up for a year that's now sitting in a pet home neutered. Oh, great.
Right. Right. I agree and I disagree, though, because the one thing that I've learned is with the Airedales, we've worked as a team. Mm-hmm. So Susan Rogers and Dr. Shirley Good, the Sterling mm-hmm. ladies, mm-hmm. their kennel manager, Tom Dilworth, Ernesto and Peter mm-hmm. at that kennel, mm-hmm. everybody working together indirectly. There's another woman that they have working with them at her own kennel mm-hmm. is Jo Pemble. But what's interesting is we're all small Airedale breeders that essentially have the same bloodline. We work independently, but what's phenomenal is if I need to ask what this dog was 40 years ago, if I haven't seen it, and I always say to Michael, I need it with fresh Airedale eyes, mm-hmm. I always think about what my fresh eyes would be with dogs then and now. For example, Blue Shaw of Grandeur, to me, right. is the template of the breed. But so many of those great dogs were before their time. And so you look at the older Airedales that were, to me, phenomenal. We could still walk them in the ring today and they would be competitive. Mm-hmm. Now, from a breeding perspective, I think if we as breeders and exhibitors were able to work together, and it's not dissimilar to the way clubs don't work together, that could afford right. very good strings of a, like, say, one weekend where they put five clubs together and people could be in clusters. No club would go under. You would still be well represented. And yet the handlers and the exhibitors would be able to go to one place mm-hmm. and it would obviously be much easier, right? Mm-hmm. Not dissimilar, as I said, to the breeding. I am independent on what I do, but if I need anything, I can go back to these people reach. And mm-hmm. grab. Right. And so it's phenomenal, too, from a point of view. And Mike McBeth and I talked about this not that long ago. She said,
love her.
Yes. And I've known Mike forever. But if you think about Mike, she's a third generation Dandy Dinmont breeder, mm-hmm. very successful. But Mike said to me, she said, Pam, I always watch what you're doing. And she said, I so understand it, because she said the analogy she used was, she said, like me. And like you and Michael were with Grandeur, she said, you're three generations ahead of yourself. And I think you have to be.
Have to.
And what's interesting with that, and Gare Fleck Peterson and I have discussed this as well on that same vein, is the people back in the day, especially, we were just looking for Airedale semen in England.
Okay.
Well, they didn't think of doing that. Their entire mindset was to move forward and past it. But if we had the capability of those bloodlines, and a lot of them are saved here in this country.
Right.
Like, we have semen on different breeds of dogs, but I mean, Airedales I'm talking about specifically right now, where you can go back and that dog's been dead for 25 years, but we have it.
Right.
So we can dip back into it. And there's a saying that Michael and I have always said, it's actually in policing as well, but the best indicator of future behavior is past behavior, mm-hmm. right? And
absolutely.
With breeding as well, the best indicator of what you're going to get is what you've had. And quality begets quality was a line that we used a lot in Granger.
Right.
And the other thing that Sonny taught Michael and Michael and Roger taught me was the idea of you need to have that foresight. So as Sonny would say to Michael, and Michael taught me in that famous Granger logo on the Eskimo pie wrapper,
right.
it was just a few lines on that. Sonny would say, and Annie, I know, subscribed to this as well. We see it all the time on Facebook, what her priorities were. But Sonny would say to Michael, you can take a great dog and find it in the park or a pound or whatever. So the intrinsic qualities of the breeds, whether it's in judging, whether it's in breeding, whether it's in just observing dogs, and I find it really interesting in any breed when I'm judging, because I look at them and think, okay, in my mind, who were the great ones? In my mind, what are the intrinsic qualities of the breed and the essence of the breed that makes it that breed? And if it has four good legs, it's a bonus.
Right.
But it's about art form in the breeding, and it's about definitely for shows like we're about to go into now. And I found that even judging with Orlando, and I was fortunate enough to judge Westminster here last year, and it's about teamwork. Michael and I talked about that. When you think of dogs in your mind that are the great ones, oftentimes they may not have been the greatest dogs, but they were dogs that loved themselves.
Exactly.
There was that it factor
yep.
that people would see in the whelping box.
Right.
And it was nurtured and carried on with the teamwork of the people in the ring. And so when you think of, for example, we'll use Grandeur for a second, the Grandeur dogs, Trist of Grandeur was not my favorite Afghan, nor Michael's. But if you ask anybody, even outside of our kennel, I'm not even going to say outside of Afghans because that's not fair to her. There's a lot of people that she was their favorite Afghan. But what I find interesting is when I listen to people say it's in any breed, because of Michael and that bitch at Westminster is why I wanted to show a dog.
Right.
And Michael in the famous sequin jacket.
Yes, the jacket. Right? We were just talking about the jacket.
Right.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. I'm so excited, and I just can't hide it. Yeah, I know, I promised I was never going to sing again. But I'm saying, our new audiobook is available now. Whoop, yeah! Pure Dog Talks, How to Stack Your Dog and Other Important Talks is a 2-CD set featuring early mentoring episodes from the podcast, tips, and previously unrecorded pep talks. This is a power-packed opportunity for folks who don't want to search our exhaustive 260-some-odd episode library for just the topic they're looking for. This 2-hour series is a great resource for breeders and mentors, 4-H leaders, anybody that's looking for a straight-line trajectory from what kind of dog should I get to raising a show dog, how to stack and move with your dog, to counting championship points for your new dog. Super easy to purchase. Just drop PayPal $25 a book to Laura at puredogtalk.com and make sure audiobook is in the comments and that your mailing address is included, because shipping is free, that's on me, and I'll have it to you in just a few days. Breeder and mentor bundles are available. I'll give you a 10% discount on 5 or more, and this is a very limited print run. So get your order in today. May not be here tomorrow.
So I think one of the things that's interesting, and let's talk about this a little bit, we talk about the great ones, right? You talk, it's a good one or it's a great one, right? So you look at a dog, it's a good one, it's a great one. And the difference and all of that. So let's talk about another one of my favorite things. Within type, type is what makes the breed, then there's style. And this is, to me, always fascinating. You look at, use Afghans, use Trist and use like Pepsi, okay? Totally different style dogs. How do we explain to people that they're both great ones while they are different styles?
Well, that's interesting because I think it's very typical of how one interprets it, not dissimilar to how one judges. We can look at a blueprint with the standard, right? And I can be sitting there listening. I organize judging seminars in Canada for our judges' education. And it always fascinates me. And it's true fascination on human nature and interpretation. I can listen to 30 judges in a room taking a judges' seminar. And 3 or 4 will be very similar to the way I'm interpreting it.
Right.
Some will interpret it completely opposite, and I used to look and think, what is going through your mind? But what's interesting is if you allow them to articulate what it is, oftentimes they'll get there. Very similar as well in the education process to Dog Judges Institute and American Dog Show Judges. I learned so much with Dr. and Mrs. Penta in regards to being able to articulate what I saw.
Right.
And I learned there, I think, more than anything when it came to style and type, because listening to different judges articulate not only what they observed, but what they saw. And I think how they see things and how they articulate it are completely different sometimes.
Oh, interesting.
And the only way that I really think style and type differ is in your mind's eye. First of all, what your background is, and if you've seen great ones, and you've been around great ones. And Peter Green always has a point, too, that, for example, just using terriers, for example, for terrier judges, if you haven't lived with them, you don't understand them. And people that don't live with terriers think that means personality, but it doesn't. So how you interpret a breed, I've seen breeders in Airedales go so far off the map on what that breed is supposed to be. And when I know that we're in trouble when it comes to type and style is when someone says to me, I loved that Airedale bitch. She was fancy. And Gabriel Rangel just brought that up not that long ago in Philadelphia. And he said to me, just because your bitch is standing there, not necessarily looking like the others, does in no way make her wrong. And I thought it's such an interesting thing to say because that speaks directly to type and style. And so there is nowhere in the Airedale standard that uses the word fancy. Mm-mm. They are not to be black and tan wires, right? They're to have girth. They're to have substance. They're to have a brick head. You want that wonderful wire furnishing. But if I put that bitch in the ring, the bitch that we're referring to, she's not fancy. Right. And I'm good with that. Right. Because it's not what I'm looking for. And it's not, as a breeder, what I'm going to look for breeding. To answer your question about Trist and Pepsi, I think they're similar but not. So Pepsi, to me, was a very moderate dog in a lot of ways. I think Pepsi certainly was a showman. He was a powerful dog in his own right. Breeder, owner, handled dog. But not taking away from anything he did, if I looked in a ring and I was to choose a dog between him and Trist, if you right. put them together, right. it would be her every time. And it's because she filled my eye. And what was interesting with Trist was she would look through you. She was all hound. But at the same time, when you're talking about teamwork and style, she had presence and style that I've never seen. And I still, to this day, haven't seen. And it's interesting, when Karen showed her taco dog, he had a different presence and style as well. Again, very much onto his own right, and right. something that you can see coming down in her bloodlines to this day. But it speaks to all those dogs, and we'll stick with Pepsi and Trist. Yes, they were different type. In a way, they were different style, but they had something that they brought to the table that was their own style. And it's not dissimilar to speaking of somebody that you think in dogs that's well-dressed and what style they brought to the table. So think about even back three icons in our sport, Annie, Ann Rogers Clark, Michelle Billings, and Jane Forsythe, yeah. right? So
it's a great comparison.
But that's the first thing that I think of.
That's a great comparison. I love that.
Yeah.
Because they were so distinct unto themselves. Right. And yet, each powerful, strong, beautiful woman.
Right.
But very, very unique.
Right. And each had a style, each had a flair, each had, like, if you were, any of us were to take a photo of them and cut off their head and say, who is that? We know, because Michelle Billings taught me, you can go back and look in my closet at the Stewart right now. I have four black crepe dresses in that closet.
Yep.
And she always taught me that. Accessorize, 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 but this is your style. If this is what you choose, this is your look. And until the day she died, she wore at the bigger events black crepe. And she taught me the funniest thing about that, though. She said, Pam, people think it's my style, but she said it's my go-to and my function. You can roll it up in a ball, you can pull it back out, and it's still the beautiful black crepe skirt. And it's not dissimilar to a dog. It's just that architect or the architectural background of it, where you sit and go, okay, this is my basic, this is my standard, and now I'm going to zhuzh it up a bit.
I love that. That's beautiful. Michelle Billings, she was my favorite. I just
adored her. Not even a question.
Just adored her. And she gave me a group on a pug dog. And I was going in to the group ring, and it was hot. It was outside. It was Wisconsin. It was like 105 and 98% humidity. And I'm getting ready to go into the group ring. And I know she's judging. And I'm putting my hosiery back on, which normally at an outdoor show in Wisconsin, I would never, ever wear nylons, right? And I walk out of the restroom where I'm putting on this hosiery and sweating and swearing.
It's a whole job. I'm exhausted putting them on.
Right? Yeah. And I look up and there's Michelle and I'm like, you do understand. You are the only reason I'm putting these nylons. Because I would be horrified, horrified to walk into her ring with bare legs. Horrified. I would rather die, and I almost did.
That is so funny. I'll tell you a story of hosiery that you'll laugh at. Michelle was having a fit because she was so tired of, in her later years, trying to get the black nylons on and the whole, and I introduced her to Spanx. I brought her what they call two-timing Spanx, and it was gray on one side and black on the other.
Nice.
And I remember bringing those to her for the garden, and she walked in with these Spanx, and she said to me, "Best invention ever." And it was so funny because I would send her Spanx all the time as they evolved. And they work so well with the black crepe, right? And our black flags. Right. And we just laughed about it forever on that. And Janie was the same way, just very different on her style. But Janie was somebody that I was always so conscious of, not about my nylons, which I totally agree with you that that was something always set with me with Michelle. But Janie, I always wanted to have the match sets, and they were perfect.
Right.
Because Lord knows how perfect she was when it came to that. Right. And then again, Annie, when you look at her, and not dissimilar, I mean, I was shorter than her, but
only barely.
But barely. And then now from being sick, I have that girth.
Right.
So from surviving the cancer, I was always a skinny blonde, and now I'm, you know, reaching Annie's proportions. And so I laugh about it thinking, God love her, like how hard and how challenging it is to be able to look that way and really make sure that you're presentable when you're a larger person, whether it's size or height or a combination.
You know, what I loved about Annie is she was so no-nonsense. I mean, absolutely no. I have a win photo with a dog. I mean, talk about your people that find the greats, right?
Right.
So this was a dog who turned into the breed's first Best in Show winning dual champion in German Wire Hair
Pointers. Oh, wow.
And she found him as a 7-month-old puppy, gave him the breed.
Of course she did.
Yep. Gave him the breed over his mother and everybody else that was there. And it was pouring rain, outdoors, whatever, and we're both in rain suits, and I look like something the cat drug in, and she looks magnificent. I'm like, what is up with that?
I know.
You're in a rain suit, and you look good.
Do you know, it's funny when you talk about the way she portrayed herself. There was no one in this world that I was afraid of as far as revering them. I think Mr. Bibbin is so phenomenal and his ring presence, but he's never intimidated me. And I think it's because of the dangerous offenders I work with and the people in the police service that were of such high rank. Anybody that I'm around, nothing intimidates me that way. Janie was always, she would always call herself to me Aunt Janie. So she was so humorous and funny. Michelle taught me such great lessons privately, but Annie always, I was not terrified of, but I was always unnerved. And there was two dog show incidents where I thought, I'm not going to survive this day. One was under Annie, and we were in upstate New York, and it had been pouring rain. And I was trying desperately to get to the dog show because there was a major. And the judges that weekend, believe it or not, were Ann Rogers Clark, Nigel Aubrey Jones, and Bill Taylor.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was like, literally, start the car. And Michael was already there. And it was so bad on the roads. It was hydroplaning under the wheels. And I was so careful trying to get there. And I'll never forget it. We got there. And I think Michael had Triumph. And I had a Triumph Son. And as I started out on the big go-around, and that was back in the day where our class was like 30,
right?
And these were 5-point majors. And I started out, and I lost the leash. And the dog, totally just because my hands were soaking wet, everything was soaking wet. And she was standing there, this beacon, and she was absolutely perfection. I am exhausted from making that drive and soaked to the skin because my rain gear, of course, is in the car where it should be. And the dog, I carried him up, making sure he was fine. So Michael's outside the ring, and I'm in there under Annie, and I dropped the leash. He was in the front of the line. He comes all the way around on his own and stands right in front of her and puts his head up as she walks towards him for examination. She had already gone over half the dog before I caught him because I lost my shoe on the far side of the ring. And I walked up and she said, "It's okay, neither one of us really need you anyway." And I thought, this is my life as I know it. And she gave me the major. He was a well-deserved dog. And I thought, I am never going to live this down. And the second time that it happened to me was right after I brought Trist down. I had brought Trist home. She had been very, very ill. And I had brought Trist home and nursed her back to health from Michael and Roger. And I had taken her in Canada and finished her championship in 18 hours. There was a specialty and she won a huge hound specialty and an all breed best in show. And I needed my third first place ribbon, my winner's ribbon. So I waited till the following morning and finished her again with a group from the classes. So the following weekend, she finished her championship in Canada in one weekend. The following weekend, we were flying into a show in Long Island, and I was coming down to show Trist in the classes, and Michael had Triumph as a special, and it was under Babby. So Ruth Tongren is in the ring, and I adored her, and she was as sarcastic as I am, which was great. I am now. I certainly wasn't then. And Michael was at the front of the line with Triumph, and I was the very last one in line. I'd gone winner's bitch. And she said to me, do you see that little bald man up at the front with that Afghan with the big round eyes and the no hair on his feet? And I looked up and Michael was at the front of the line. And all I could get out of my mouth was, ma'am, he doesn't have yellow eyes. And she said, it's neither here nor there. She said, are you going to be in trouble if you go and stand in front of that man? And I said, yes, ma'am. And she said, off you go. And I walked by Michael to set up in front of him, and I stuck my tongue out at him as he walked by. And Triumph was standing there to perfection, as so was Michael. And she gave Trist the breed. And Michael showed her in the group and won the group under David McIntyre from Canada, which was, like, hilarious. But those are the two times where I thought, you know, I'm dating myself with the Bugs Bunny hole in the floor, right, the black right, hole that right, you could just, right. I thought if I could just fall in yeah, now, be I'd great. Be good. Yeah.
Well, I'm laughing hysterically because your embarrassing story, and Pure Dog Talk listeners will know, I try to, you know, tell people it's okay, we've all lived through embarrassing stories. You managed to get all of my embarrassing stories in one. I mean, I've lost my shoe, I've lost my leash, but I've never lost them all at the same time.
And under Annie.
Under right? Annie Clark.
And under Annie.
Oh my God, no, my favorite was my shoe flying off my foot as I'm leading the group with wire hair pointer. Flies to the middle of the ring. So what are you going to do, right? Round you go, once you on, once you off. Carlos Puig comes in at the end of the line, he was showing the Clumber at the time, runs to the middle of the ring, picks up the shoe. Cinderella! Cinderella! Curtsy, yes. Yeah. Dana Klein judging that group.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Remember it well.
Another man that's dressed to perfection
exactly.
and commands his ring.
Right? Exactly. Right. That's me with my shoe. That's great.
But saying that, we survived.
We did. We did. And that's, listeners need to remember, we all survived. Far worse things than anything that could happen.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.